For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Brooks Jensen, Anacortes, Washington. Master and Man by Leo Tolstoy. This book consists of 10 sections. Section 1. It was in the 70s, the day after the Feast of St. Nicholas in the winter. There had been a festival in the parish, and the church sexton, Vasily Andreyevich Brukhonov, who was also a merchant of the Second Guild, had been forced to remain at home, since not only was his presence necessary at the church, but he had been receiving and entertaining some friends and relations. Now, however, the last of his guests had departed, and he was able to get himself ready to visit a neighboring landowner for the purpose of buying some timber for which he had long been in treaty. He was in a hurry to be off, lest rival buyers from the town should deprive him of this eligible bargain. The only reason why the young landowner had asked 10,000 rubles for the timber was that Vasily Andreyevich had offered him 7, and 7 represented about a third of its value. Perhaps Vasily might have gone on haggling still further, for the wood was in his own district, and there was a recognized agreement between the local merchants and himself that one merchant should not bid against another in the same district, were it not that he had heard that the government forest contractors were also thinking of coming to treat for the Goviatchkinsky timber, and therefore he had better make up his mind to go at once and clinch the matter. So, as soon as the festival was over, he took 700 rubles of his own out of the strongbox, added to them 2,300 more out of the church funds, which he had by him, making 3,000 in all, and counted them carefully. Then he placed them in his pocketbook and got ready to go. Nikita, the only one of Vasily's workmen who was not drunk that day, ran to put the horse in. Nikita was not drunk that day, for the reason that he had formerly been a toper, but after pawning his jacket and leather boots for drinking during the flesh-eating days, had suddenly forsworn liquor altogether and drunk nothing during the second month. Even on the present occasion he had kept his vow, in spite of the temptation of the liquor which had flowed in all directions during the first 2 days of the festival. He was a mujik of about 50, and hailed from a neighboring village, where, however, it was said that he was not a householder, but had lived most of his life among strangers. Everywhere he was valued for his handiness, industry, and strength, as well as, still more, for his kindly, cheerful disposition. Yet he had never remained long in any one place, since twice a year or more he had been accustomed to get drunk, and at those times would not only pawn everything he possessed, but grow uproarious and quarrelsome as well. Vasily himself had dismissed him more than once, yet had always taken him on again because of the store which he set by his honesty, care for animals, and, most important of all, cheapness. In fact, Vasily allowed Nikita a wage, not of 80 rubles a year, the true market value of such a workman, but of 40 only. Moreover, this wage was doled out irregularly and in driblets, as well as, for the most part, not in cash at all, but in the form of goods purchased at a high price from Vasily's own store. Nikita's wife, Martha, a rugged dame who had once been good-looking, lived at home with their little lad and two girls, but never invited her husband to come and see her, since, in the first place, she had lived for the last 20 years with a cooper, originally a mujik from a distant village who had come to lodge in the hut, and in the second, because although she could do what she liked with her husband when he was sober, she dreaded him like fire when he was drunk. Once, for instance, when drunk at home, he had seized the occasion to avenge himself upon his wife for all his submissiveness to her when sober, by breaking into her private box, possessing himself of her best clothes, laying all the gowns and other gewgaws upon the woodblock, and chopping them into shreds with an axe. Yet all his earnings were handed over to Martha. Never once had he disputed this arrangement. In fact, only a couple of days before the festival, she had driven over to Vasily's store and been supplied by him with white meal, tea, sugar, and a pint of vodka, to the value of 3 rubles, as well as with 5 rubles in cash, for all of which she thanked Vasily as for a particular favor, although, as a matter of fact, Vasily was in Nikita's debt to the extent of at least 20 rubles. "What agreement need you and I make together?" Vasily had said to Nikita. "Take what you need as you earn it. I don't do business as other folks do, keep my creditors waiting, and go in for detailed accounts and deductions and so on. You and I can trust one another. Only serve me well, and I shall never fail you." In saying this, Vasily really had believed that he was being good to Nikita, for he could speak so persuasively and had always been so entirely supported in his decisions by his dependents from Nikita upwards, that even he himself had come to feel comfortably persuaded that he was not cheating them, but actually benefiting them. "Yes, yes, I understand you, Vasily Andreevich," Nikita had replied. "I understand you perfectly well, and will serve and work for you as for my own father." Nevertheless, Nikita had not been ignorant that Vasily was cheating him. He had only felt that it would be no use his trying to get a detailed account out of his master, and that, in default of another place to go to, he had better grin and bear it and take what he could get. So, when ordered to harness the horse, Nikita proceeded to the stable in his usual cheerful, good-natured manner, and with the usual easy stride of his rather waddling legs. There he took down from a peg the heavy headstall, and with its straps and tassels and rattling the bit against the side pieces, proceeded to the stall where the horse was standing, which he was ready to get. "Oh, ho, so you find time long, do you, my little beauty?" he said, in reply to the low whinny of welcome which greeted him from the shapely, middle-sized, low-rumped, dark-brown stallion cob, which was the sole occupant of the loose box. "Nay, nay," he went on, "you are in a hurry to be off, I dare say, but I must water you first." He always spoke to the animal as one might speak to a being capable of understanding human speech. Then, having wiped the sleek, though dusty and harnessed, galled back of the cob with a cloth, he adjusted the headstall to the handsome young head, pulled the ears and forehead tuft through, let down the halter, and led the animal out to drink. As soon as Brownie had picked his way gingerly out of the dung-heaped stall, he grew lively and threw up his heels, pretending that he wanted to kick Nikita as the latter trotted behind him to the water trough. Quiet then, you little rascal," exclaimed Nikita, though well aware that Brownie was taking good care to throw out his hind leg in such a manner as to only graze Nikita's greasy fur coat, not strike it direct, a trick which Nikita always admired. Having drunk his fill of cold water, the animal snorted as he stood twitching his strong, wet lips, from the hairs of which the bright, transparent drops kept dripping back into the trough. Then he stood motionless for an instant or two, as though engaged in thought, and then suddenly gave a loud neigh. You don't want any more. You wouldn't get it even if you did, so you needn't ask for it," said Nikita, explaining his conduct to Brownie with absolute gravity and precision. Then he set off running back to the stable, holding the spirited young cob by the halter as the animal kicked and snorted all across the yard. None of the other workmen were about, only the cook's husband, who had come over for the festival from another village. "Go in, will you, my boy," said Nikita to this man, "and ask which sled I am to get ready, the big one or the little one." The man disappeared into the house, which was iron-roofed and stood upon a raised foundation, and returned in a moment with a message that it was the little sledge which was to be used. Meanwhile, Nikita slipped the collar over the cob's head and adjusted the brass-studded saddle-piece, and was now walking with a light-painted douga in one hand and the end of the cob's halter in the other towards the two sledges standing beneath the shed. In a footnote, the translator explains the term douga is a curved frame fitted with bells which surmounts the collar in a Russian harness. "If the little sledge, then the little sledge," he remarked, and proceeded to back the clever little animal into the shafts, it pretending meanwhile to bite him, and with the other man's assistance to harness it to the vehicle. When all was ready and there remained only the reins to be put on, Nikita sent his assistant to the stable for some straw, and then to the storehouse for a sack. "There now, that will do," said Nikita, as he stuffed into the sledge the freshly cut oaten straw which the man had brought. "But nay, nay," he said to Brownie, "you need not prick your ears like that. Well, suppose we put the straw so, and the sack on top of it. Then it will be comfortable for you to sit upon." And he suited the action to the words by tucking the edges of the sack under the straw disposed around the seat. "Thank you, my boy," he added to the cook's husband. "Two pairs of hand work quicker than one." After that, he buckled the loose ends of the reins together, mounted the splashboard, and drove the good little steed, all impatient to be off, across the frozen dung of the yard to the entrance gates. "Uncle Makit! Uncle Makit!" came the shrill little voice of a 7-year-old boy from behind him as the youngster ran hastily out of the porch into the yard, a youngster who was dressed in a short jacket of black fur, new white bast shoes, and a cozy cap. "Let me get up, too," he implored, fastening his jacket as he ran. "Well, well, come here then, my dear," said Nikita, pulling him up. Then, seating the master's pale, thin little son behind him, he drove the boy, beaming with pleasure, out into the street. It was now 3 o'clock in the afternoon and freezing hard, the thermometer registering only 10 degrees. Yet the weather was dull and gusty, and fully half the sky was covered by a low, dark bank of cloud. In the courtyard the air was still, but directly one stepped into the street outside, the wind became more noticeable, and the snow could be seen twirling itself about in wreaths as it was swept from the roof of a neighboring outbuilding into the corner near the bathhouse. Hardly had Nikita returned through the gates and turned the cob's head towards the steps when Vasily Andreyitch, a cigarette between his lips and a sheepskin coat upon his shoulders, fastened tightly and low down with a belt, came out of the house door and upon the high, snow-trampled flight of steps, making them creak loudly under his felt boots as he did so. Drawing the last whiff from his cigarette, he threw down the fag end and stamped it out. Then, puffing the smoke out of his mustache, he glanced at the cob as it re-entered the gates and began to turn out the corners of his coat collar in such a way that the fur should be next to his face on either side. His face was clean-shaven except for the mustache, and yet not liable to be fouled with his breath. "So you have managed it, you little monkey!" he exclaimed as he caught sight of his little boy seated in the sledge. Vasily was a little animated with the wine which he had been drinking with his guests, and therefore the more ready to approve of all that belonged to him and all that he had done in life. The aspect of his little son at that moment, of the little boy whom he intended to be his heir, afforded him the greatest satisfaction, as he stood blinking at him and grinning with his long teeth. In the porch behind Vasily stood his pale, thin wife, Vasilia Andreitcha. She was enciente and had her head and shoulders muffled up in a woolen shawl so that only her eyes were visible. "Had not you better take Nikita with you?" she said, stepping timidly forward from the porch. Vasily returned her no answer, but merely frowned angrily, as though somehow displeased at her words, and spat upon the ground. "You see, you will be travelling with money on you," she continued in the same anxious tone. "Besides, the weather might grow worse." "Don't I know the road, then, that I must needs have a guide with me?" burst out Vasily with that unnatural stiffening of his lips which marked his intercourse with buyers and sellers when he was particularly desirous of enunciating each syllable distinctly. "Yes, do take him, for heaven's sake, I implore you," repeated his wife, as she shifted her shawl to protect the other side of her face. "Goodness! Why, you stick to me like a bathing towel," cried Vasily. "Where can I find room for him on the sledge?" "I am quite ready to go," put in Nikita cheerfully. "Only someone else must feed the other horses while I am away," this last to his mistress. "Yes, yes, I will see to that, Nikita," she replied. "I will tell Simon to do it." "Then I am to go with you, Vasily Andreitch?" said Nikita expectantly. "Well, I suppose I must humour the good lady," answered Vasily. "Only if you go, you had better put on a rather better, not to say warmer, diplomatist's uniform than that." And he smiled and winked one eye at Nikita's fur jacket, which, truth to tell, had holes under its two arms, down the back, and round the sides, besides being greasy, matted, shorn of hooks, and torn into strips around the edges. "Here, my good fellow, come and hold the cob, will you?" shouted Nikita across the yard to the cook's husband. "No, no, let me do it," cried the little boy, drawing his small, red, frozen hands out of his pockets and catching hold of the chilly reins. "Don't be too long over your new uniform, please," said Vasily to Nikita with a grin. "No, no, Vasily Andreitch, I shan't be a moment," protested Nikita, as he went shuffling hurriedly off in his old felt boots towards the servants' quarters across the yard. "Now then, my good Aranishka, give me my halat from the stove. I am going with master," shouted Nikita as he burst into the hut and seized his belt from a peg. And here in a footnote, the translator describes a halat as a kind of frock coat. The cook, who had been enjoying a good sleep after dinner and was now getting tea ready for her husband, greeted Nikita cheerfully and, catching the infection of his haste, began to bustle about briskly as he himself. First she took from the stove a shabby but well-aired cloth halat and set about shaking and smoothing it out with all possible speed. "You are far more fit to go with master than I am," he said to the cook, in accordance with his usual habit of saying something civil to everyone with whom he came in contact. Then, twisting about him the shabby, well-worn belt, he succeeded first in compressing his not over-prominent stomach and then in drawing the belt with great effort over his fur coat. "There you are," he said, not to the cook, but to the belt, as he tucked its ends in. "You can't very well burst apart like that." Then, with a hoist and much heaving of the shoulders, he drew the cloth halat over all, stretching its back well to give looseness in the arms, and patted it into place under the armpits. Finally, he took his mittens from a shelf. "Now," said he, "I am all right." "But you have forgotten about your feet," cried the cook. "Those boots are awful." Nikita stopped, as if struck by this. "Yes, perhaps I ought to change," he began, but changed his mind, and exclaiming, "No, he might go without me if I did. I have not far to walk," bolted off into the yard. "But won't you be cold in that halat only, Nikita?" said his mistress when he reached the sledge. "No, indeed. How should I? It is very warm," answered Nikita, as he disposed the straw over the forepart of the sledge in such a manner as would conceal his feet after he had mounted, and thrust the whip, not needed for so willing a steed, under the straw. Vasily had already taken his seat, his broad back with its double covering of furs filling almost the entire rear part of the sledge. Then, taking up the reins, he flicked the cob with them while Nikita jumped into the fore part of the sledge just as it started, and sat leaning forward to the left and sticking out one leg. This ends part one. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Brooks Jensen, Anacortes, Washington. Master and Man by Leo Tolstoy. Section 2. The good little cob moved the sledge rapidly along with a light creaking of the runners as he trotted a round pace over the well-beaten, frozen piece of road leading to the village. "Hello! What have you jumped up for?" cried Vasily, suddenly, clearly enjoying the fact that an unauthorized passenger was trying to perch himself upon the runners behind. "Give me the whip, Nikita," he interjected. "I'll thrash you, you young rascal. Run along home to your mother." The boy jumped off. Brownie broke into a gallop, but soon changed to a trot again. Kresti, where Vasily lived, was a hamlet of 6 houses only, and when they had got beyond the blacksmith's hut at the end, they at once perceived that the wind was much stronger than they had thought it to be, and that the road ahead was almost invisible. The track of the sledge became snowed over almost as fast as made, and only the fact that the road was a little higher than the ground on either side of it rendered it at all distinguishable. The snow was whirling over the countryside and blotting out the horizon, while the Teliatinsky forest, generally clearly visible, now showed only as a dark mass looming at intervals through the snow dust. The wind was blowing from the left, and kept turning Brownie's mane over his thick, fat neck and blowing his feathery tail, bound at the top in a plain knot, across his flank. Owing to the wind, too, Nikita's tall coat collar, where he sat on the weather side of the sledge, kept pressing itself tightly against his cheeks and nose. "The cob can't get up too much of a pace today. There's too much snow on the ground," said Vasily, who prided himself on the excellence of his steed. "Once I drove him to Pashutino in half an hour." "What did you say?" asked Nikita, whose tall coat collar had prevented him from hearing what was said. "I said that I have driven to Pashutino in half an hour," bawled Vasily. "That's something to boast of indeed. He's a good animal, if there ever was one," commented Nikita, after which they kept silent for a while. Vasily, however, was inclined to be talkative. "What do you think? I told your wife the other day not to let her cooper drink all the tea," he bawled once more, in the firm conviction that Nikita must be feeling flattered at being talked to by such an important and highly educated man as himself, as well as so greatly taken with his own joke about the cooper that it never entered into his head that the topic might be distasteful to Nikita. However, the latter had once more failed to catch his master's words for the violence of the wind, so Vasily repeated his pleasantry at the very top of his educated voice. "God be with her, Vasily Andreich," returned Nikita when he understood. "I never interfere with their affairs. She has given me little cause for blame, and, so long as she treats the lad well, I merely say, God be with her." "Well, well," said Vasily, and changed the subject. "Are you going to buy a horse in the spring?" he continued. "I only wish I could," replied Nikita, as he turned his coat collar back a little and leant over towards his master. The new topic interested him, and he wanted to catch every word. "My little lad is fast growing up and ought to learn to plow, but I have squandered all my money." "Well, if you'll take the low-rumped nag off my hands, I won't ask you much for it," said Vasily, whose spirits were rising, and who therefore recurred instinctively to his ruling passion, the passion which absorbed his whole faculties, namely, the pursuit of bargains. "I would rather you lent me 15 rubles and let me go and buy one in the horse market," answered Nikita, knowing full well that the low-rumped nag which Vasily was asking him to buy was worth no more than 7 rubles at the outside, but that as soon as ever Vasily had handed him over the animal, he would swear that it was worth at least 25, and therefore retain about a half a year's wages to cover the amount. "The horse is a splendid one," went on Vasily in his precise, business-like tones. "I want to do you a service as well as myself. Honestly, now, Brekhunov would never do any man a bad turn. I would rather be out of pocket myself than see others so. Yes, on my honour. The horse is a magnificent one." "I am sure of it," said Nikita with a sigh. Then, finding it useless to try and listen further, he turned up his coat-collar again, and his face and ear became covered in a twinkling. For about half an hour they drove in silence. The wind kept getting down on Nikita's legs and through a hole in his mitten, but he hunched his shoulders and breathed into the coat-collar muffled over his mouth so that he did not feel the cold very much at all. "What do you think? Shall we go around by Karamishevo or straight on?" asked Vasily presently. The road by way of Karamishevo was the longer and the rougher one, yet, on the other hand, it was clearly defined by posts on either side. The road straight on was a good deal nearer, but used by few travellers, as well as either altogether devoid of posts or marked only by small ones, which would now be almost drifted over. Nikita debated matters for a moment. "The road by Karamishevo is longer than the other one, but a good deal the easier to drive over," he decided at length. "Yet if we go straight on," pursued Vasily, who was inclined towards the route he named, "we have only to get into the hollow, and then we can't possibly lose our way. It will be splendid going through the forest." "As you wish," said Nikita, and turned up his coat-collar again. Accordingly, Vasily had his way, and after driving about half a verst further on, turned to the left, where a tall young oak tree stood. Here the translator inserts a footnote that a verst is about two-thirds of an English mile. Its branches and the few dead leaves which still clung to them were being madly dashed about by the wind, which, after the turning, met the travellers almost full in the face. Light snow began to fall, and Vasily tightened the reins, puffed out his cheeks, and let the breath escape slowly from under his mustache, while Nikita dozed. They had driven like this in silence for about 10 minutes, when Vasily gave an exclamation. "What is it?" asked Nikita, opening his eyes. Vasily returned no answer, but twisted himself round to look back. Then he gazed ahead. The cob was still trotting along, his flanks steaming with sweat. "What is it?" asked Nikita again. "What is it, do you say?" cried Vasily in an angry mimicry of the question. "Why, only that I can't see any posts now. We must be off the road." "Wait a minute, then, while I go and look for it," said Nikita, as he leapt lightly from the sledge, and, taking the whip from beneath the straw, went ahead and towards the left, the side on which he had been sitting. The snow had not been very deep that year, so that, as yet, the road had been easily passable the whole way along. But here there were patches where it reached knee-high and smothered Nikita's boot-tops. He kept on trying the ground, both with his feet and the whip, as he walked along. Yet the road had vanished. "Well," said Vasily, when Nikita returned to the sledge. "No road on this side," answered Nikita. "I must try the other." "There seems to be something dark showing ahead," remarked Vasily. "Go and see what it is." Nikita did so, and found it to be only a spot where the naked sprouts of some winter corn sown on a piece of black earth were making a dark patch on the snow as they waved before the wind. Nikita circled round to the right, and then returned to the sledge again, beating the snow from his khalat and boots, and remounted. "We must go to the right," he said with decision. "The wind was on our left a moment ago, but now it is straight in our faces. Yes, to the right. Yes, to the right," he concluded with an air of conviction. Vasily just managed to catch what he said and turned the cob in the direction indicated. Yet no road revealed itself there, although they went on for a considerable time. Meanwhile, the wind showed no signs of dropping, and the snow continued. "Well, we are altogether lost now, Vasily Andreevich," observed Nikita, suddenly and half as though he were pleased at the fact. "What is this, though?" he went on, pointing to a blackened potato top which was projecting above the snow. Vasily at once stopped the cob, which was now sweating heavily and moving its stout flanks with difficulty. "Yes, what is it?" he echoed. "It means that we are on the Zakharovek estate. That is where we have got to." "Surely not!" exclaimed Vasily. "Yes, it is as I say," insisted Nikita. "You can tell, too, by the sound of the sledge runners that we are driving over a potato field. Look at the bits of potato tops which they have dragged off. Yes, these are the Zakharovek market gardens." "A fine place to get landed in," said Vasily. "Well, what is to be done now?" "We must keep going to the right, and we shall be sure to come out somewhere or other," answered Nikita. "If we don't actually strike Zakharovek, we shall at all events come across some tenant's farm." Vasily assented and drove the cob forward in the direction Nikita had advised. They proceeded thus for a considerable time, now coming upon bare grass, now upon rough patches of frozen ground over which the sledge went grating loudly. Then, again, they would find themselves passing over stubble of winter or spring corn, with the dead straws or sticks of weeds projecting above the snow and waving madly before the wind. More than once they found themselves laboring through deep, level, pure white drifts, with nothing whatever showing above the top. All the while the snowfall continued, and the snow dust whirled about the ground. The cob was evidently failing now, for his flanks were white and steaming with sweat. He proceeded only at a foot's pace. Suddenly he stumbled, and then plunged forward in some ditch or gully. Vasily was for pulling up, but Nikita shouted to him, "Why stop? Go on, go on! We must get him out of this!" "Now then, my beauty, now then, my pet," he went on to the cob encouragingly as he leapt from the sledge, only to stick fast in the ditch himself. However, the cob extricated himself presently and scrambled back onto the frozen ridge which lined the bank. Evidently it was a ditch dug out by hand. "Where are we now?" queried Vasily. "We must find that out," answered Nikita. "Let us push on a bit, and we shall arrive somewhere." "Isn't that the Goviatchkinsky forest, surely?" said his master presently, pointing to something black looming in the snow ahead. "It may be. We'd better push on and find out," rejoined Nikita. As a matter of fact, he had already distinguished the oblong patches of some withered vine leaves showing against the blackness of the object in question, and knew, therefore, that it was more likely to be a habitation of some kind than a forest. Yet he hesitated to speak before he knew for certain. Sure enough, they had not proceeded more than 20 yards beyond the ditch when trees showed up clearly before them and some melancholy sound became audible. Nikita had guessed rightly. It was not a forest they had come to, but a row of tall vines and a few withered leaves still quivering upon them. Evidently they marked the trench of a threshing floor. Just as the travellers had almost reached these vines, and could tell that the melancholy sound arose from the wind sweeping through their rustling leaves, the cob took a sudden plunge upward with his forehoofs, pulled up his hindquarters after them, turned to the left, and went on with the snow no longer reaching to his knees. It was the road again. "Now we have reached it," exclaimed Nikita. "But the Lord only knows where." The cob, however, never faltered, but went straight ahead with the snow-swept road until, just as they had covered about 100 yards, there uprose before them the rectangular outlines of a wattled barn, with its roof piled up with snow and the snow dust blowing from it in clouds. Passing the barn, the road wound back into the wind a little, and they found themselves in a snowdrift. A short way further on could be seen an opening between two buildings, so that it was clear that the road lay through the snowdrift, and that the latter must be surmounted. Sure enough, they had no sooner accomplished this than they found themselves in a village street, in the nearest courtyard of which some frozen linen was hanging from a line and rustling distractedly in the wind. It comprised two shirts, one of them white and the other one red, a pair of drawers, some leggings, and a petticoat, of which the white shirt was particularly abandoned in its antics as it waved its sleeves before the wind. "Ugh, the lazy woman, though I'm sorry to have to say it of her," said Nikita with a glance at the waving shirts. "To think of not getting one's linen ready for the festival." This ends section 2. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Brooks Jensen, Anacortes, Washington. Master and Man by Leo Tolstoy. Section 3. The wind was as strong at the entrance to the street as it had been in the open country, and the roadway piled with snow, but in the middle of the hamlet everything seemed warm and quiet and cheerful. A dog came barking out of a yard, while in another yard an old woman came running from somewhere with her head swathed in a handkerchief, but stopped as she was making for the door of the hut and stood for a moment on the threshold to gaze at the new arrivals. From the middle of the village came the sound of girls singing, and altogether there seemed to be less wind and cold and snow here than outside. "Why, this must be Grishkino," said Vasily. "It is," replied Nikita, and Grishkino it was. It turned out afterwards that they had left the road upon their right and travelled some 8 versts at a tangent to their former direction, though still more or less in the direction of their proper goal. Yet Goviatchkina was a full 5 versts from Grishkino. Halfway up the street, they encountered a tall man walking in the center of the roadway. "Who are you?" he cried as he stopped. Then, recognizing Vasily, he caught hold of one of the shafts, rested his hands upon it, and climbed to the seat of the sledge. It was a friend of Vasily's named Isai, known as the worst horse thief in the district. "Well, and whither is God taking you now?" said Isai, suffusing Nikita with the smell of vodka which he had been drinking. "We have been trying to get to Goviatchkina." "What a way to take, then! You should have gone by Malakova." "It's no good saying what we should have done when we didn't do it," retorted Vasily as he pulled up the cob. "That's a good animal," remarked Isai, looking the cob over and passing his hand under the now drooping stump of its stout, knotted tail in his usual horsey manner. "Are you going to stay the night here?" "No, my friend. We have further yet to go." "You had much better stay. But who is this?" "Why, if it isn't Nikita Stepanich." "Yes, no one else," replied Nikita. "But pray, tell us, brother, how to avoid losing our way again." "How to avoid losing your way again? Why, turn back and go right along the street, and the road is straight in front of you. Don't turn to the left, but keep on till you come nearly to a larger village, and then to the right." "But whereabouts is the turning near that village?" asked Nikita again. "Is it on the summer or the winter road?" "The winter. You will come to a copse there, and exactly opposite the copse there stands a tall, ragged oaken post. That is where you are to turn off." Accordingly, Vasily turned the cob's head round and drove off down the street again. "You had better have stayed the night here," shouted Isai after them. But Vasily shook up the cob and returned no answer. To cover 5 versts on level road, of which 2 would run through a forest, seemed an easy enough prospect, especially in view of the fact that the snow now seemed to them to have ceased and the wind to have dropped. Passing from the street again, with its roadway trampled hard and showing black here and there with patches of fresh dung, they drove past the yard where the linen was hanging out to dry. The white shirt had now partly torn away from the line and was dangling by one frozen sleeve only, and went on until they came to the vine stalks with their quaintly murmuring leaves. Here they were in the open country again, only to discover that the blizzard had in no way abated, but rather, on the contrary, increased. The road was drifted over ahead, and nothing but the posts alongside could keep them from leaving it. These posts, too, were difficult to distinguish, since the wind was head-on. Vasily knit his brows as he bent forward to watch for the posts, but gave the cob more rein than before and trusted to its sagacity. Sure enough, the cob never faltered, but went on turning to the left or the right according to the windings of the road and feeling for it with his hooves, so that despite the fact that the wind kept rising and the snow falling ever thicker and thicker, the posts remained plainly visible on either side. They had been driving like this for about 10 minutes when there suddenly loomed up something black in front of the cob, something which was moving along in a tangled whirl of wind-driven snow. It was a party of fellow travelers whom Brownie had outpaced, and the back of whose sledge he had actually struck into with his forehooves. "Pull out! Hi! Look out in front of you!" came in a chorus of shouts from this vehicle, and Vasily pulled out accordingly. In the sledge were seated three mujiks and an old woman. Evidently they were guests returning from the village festival. One of the men was lashing the snow-covered flanks of their pony with a dry branch. His two comrades were shouting and gesticulating at one another in the forepart of the sledge, and the old woman, muffled up and white over with snow, was seated motionless at the back. "Whose men are you?" shouted Vasily. "Aski," was all that could be heard in the answer. "Eh?" "Aski," repeated one of the mujiks at the top of his voice, but it was impossible to distinguish precisely what he said. "Lay on! Don't give way to them!" shouted another to the one belaboring the pony with the branch. "You are returning from the festival, I suppose?" "They are gaining! They are gaining! Lay on, Semka! Pull out, you! Lay on!" The sledges kept bumping against each other, almost interlocking, and then parting again, until finally the mujik's sledge began to be overhauled. Their shaggy, fat-bellied, snow-covered pony, blowing heavily under its low duga, and evidently frantic, though in vain, to escape from the flagellation of the dry branch, kept shuffling along on its stumpy legs through the deep snow, although at times they almost gave way beneath it. Its muzzle, that apparently of a young animal, with its lower lip projecting like a fish's, the nostrils distended and the ears laid back in terror, kept level with Nikita's shoulder for a few seconds, and then began to drop behind. "That's what drink will make men do," observed Nikita. "The pony will be ruined by treatment like that. What Asiatic brutes these fellows are!" For several minutes the sobbing of the distressed pony's nostrils could be heard behind them, as well as the drunken shouts of the mujiks. Then the first sound died away, and presently the second also. Nothing whatever was to be heard now, except the whistling of the wind in the traveler's ears, and an occasional faint scrape of the runners over patches which the wind had swept bare. This contest with the rival sledge had cheered and enlivened Vasily, so that he drove the cob with greater assurance than ever, and without watching for the posts at all, leaving matters, in fact, to the cob entirely. Nikita also had nothing to do, so that, as usual with him when thus situated, he fell into a doze in order to make up for arrears of sleep at other times. Suddenly the cob stopped short, almost pitching Nikita forward out of the sledge. "We have gone wrong again," said Vasily. "How do you know?" "Because there are no posts to be seen. We must have left the road." "Well, if we have, I must look for it again," remarked Nikita abruptly, as he got out and began to trudge about the snow, stepping as lightly as possible on the balls of his splayed-out feet. He kept this up for a long time, now disappearing from view, now reappearing, now vanishing again, and then returned. "No road there," he remarked as he mounted the sledge. "It must be somewhere ahead." The dusk was now coming on, and although the blizzard had not increased, it had also not lessened. "If only we could hear those mujiks," sighed Vasily. "They won't overtake us now," replied Nikita, "for we must have left the road a long way back. Perhaps they have done the same," he added as an afterthought. "Well, which way now?" inquired Vasily. "Give the cob his head," advised Nikita, "and perhaps he will take us right. Here, give me the reins." Vasily relinquished them none the less readily because his hands were half frozen in their warm mittens. Nikita took the reins, but let them lie quite passively in his fingers, endeavouring not to give them the slightest twitch. In fact, he took keen pleasure in thus trying the intelligence of his favourite. Sure enough, after pricking his ears first to the one side and then to the other, the clever animal started to turn round. "He can almost speak," cried Nikita. "My word, how well he knows what to do! On you go, then! On with you!" The wind was now at their backs again, and it seemed warmer. "Ah, what a knowing fellow he is," went on Nikita, delighted with his pet. "Kirghizhnok is strong enough, of course, but an absolute fool. Whereas this fellow, well, see what he found out with his ears alone. No need of telegraphs for him, when he can smell out a road a verst away." And indeed, less than half an hour later, a black object, either a wood or a village, began to loom ahead, while the posts reappeared on their right, placing it beyond doubt that the travellers had hit the road once more. "If this isn't Grishkino again!" exclaimed Nikita suddenly. And Grishkino it was. On their left showed the barn with the dust blowing from its roof, while further on could be seen the clothesline with its burden of shirts and drawers still fluttering in the wind. Once again they drove up the street and found everything grow suddenly quiet and warm and cheerful. Once again the miry roadway appeared, voices and singing became audible, and the dog barked as before. The dusk, however, was now so far advanced that lights could be seen gleaming in some of the windows. Halfway up the street, Vasily turned the cob's head towards a large hut with a double coping of bricks, and pulled up to the steps. Nikita approached the gleaming snow-encrusted window, in the light of which the dancing snowflakes glittered brightly, and knocked at the pane with the butt end of his whip. "Who is there?" cried a voice in answer to Nikita's summons. "The Brekhanovs, from Gristy, brother," replied Nikita. "Please let us in." Someone could be heard moving away from the window, and in another 2 minutes the sound of the inner door opening with a wrench. Then the latch of the outer door rattled, and there came out a tall, old, white-bearded mujik, holding the door half-closed behind him to keep the wind from blowing into the hut. He was clad in a fur coat, hastily thrown over a white holiday shirt, while behind him stood a young fellow in a red shirt and tall boots. "How is it with you, Andreich?" inquired the old man. "We have lost our way, my friend," replied Vasily. "We tried to get to Goviatchkina, but landed here, and we set off again and have just missed the road for the second time." "But how came you to go wrong?" asked the old man. "Here, Petrushka," and he turned to the young fellow in the red shirt, "go and open the yard gates." "Certainly," responded the youngster cheerfully, and ran forward out of the porch. "No, no, we must not stop the night," interposed Vasily. "But where can you be going now? It's nearly dark. You had much better stay here." "I should have been only too glad to do so, but I simply cannot. Business, you see, my friend, and business won't wait." "Then at least come in and warm yourselves with some tea," said the old man. "Yes, we might do that," replied Vasily. "The night won't grow any darker than it is now, for the moon will soon be rising. Shall we go in and warm ourselves, Nikita?" "Yes, I could do with something to warm me," replied Nikita, who was desperately cold, and only too eager to thaw his frozen limbs before a stove. Vasily thereupon entered the hut with the old man, while Nikita drove the sledge through the yard gates, duly opened for him by Petrushka. Under the latter's guidance, he then led the cob under the roof of a shed. The shed was heaped high with dung, so that the cob's lofty duga caught upon a beam, whereupon the cock and the hens which were roosting there were moved to uneasy flutterings and scratchings of their claws. Some sheep darted away in terror, with much pattering of their hooves over the frozen dung, and a dog whined loudly, then growled in angry alarm, and finally barked at the intruder in puppy fashion. Nikita had a word for them all. he begged the hens pardon and quieted them by saying that he would not disturb them further, chided the sheep for their unreasoning nervousness, and never ceased to make overtures to the dog as he tied up his steed. "We shall be all right now," he said as he beat the snow from his clothes. "Hush, then, how he growls," he added to the dog. "It's all right now. Quiet, then, stupid. Be quiet. You are only disturbing yourself for nothing. We are not thieves." "They are what we might call our three domestic counselors," remarked Petrushka as he drew the sledge under the shed with his powerful hands. "Why counselors?" asked Nikita. "Because," said Petrushka with a smile, "you will find it written in Paulson's book, when a thief is sneaking up to a house, the dog barks out in his own language, 'Wake up!' The cock sings out, 'Get up!' And the cat starts washing herself, meaning thereby to say, 'A guest is at hand, so let us be ready to receive him.'" Petrushka, it seemed, was of a literary turn, and knew by heart the only book which he possessed, some book or other by Paulson. He was particularly fond of it when he had had a little to drink, as now, and would quote such extracts from it as might seem to him to fit the occasion. "That is just right," observed Nikita. "Yes, isn't it?" answered Petrushka. "But you are simply frozen. Shall I take you into tea now, my boy?" "Yes, by all means," replied Nikita, and they crossed the yard to the hut door. This ends Section 3. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Brooks Jensen, Anacortes, Washington. Master and Man by Leo Tolstoy. Section 4. The homestead where Vasily had pulled up was one of the richest in the village, for the family held no less than 5 lots of land, as well as rented some, while in the stables stood 6 horses, 3 cows, 2 draft bullocks, and a flock of 20 sheep. In all, there lived around the courtyard of the homestead 22 souls, namely 4 married sons, 6 grandchildren, of whom one, Petrushka, was married, 2 great-grandchildren, 3 orphans, and 4 daughters-in-law with their children. In addition to these, there were 2 sons employed as water carriers in Moscow, while a 3rd was in the army. At the present moment, there were at home only the old man, his wife, the 2nd of the married sons, the elder of the 2 sons who worked at Moscow, come over for the festival, and the various wives and children, and a neighboring gossip. It was one of those rare households which are still to be found undivided, yet one in which there were already at work those deep-rooted and internal dissensions which generally originate among the women of a family, and which would break up this family also in time. Over the table in the hut there hung a shaded lamp, throwing a clear light upon the crockery below, upon a bottle of vodka, and upon sundry viands, as well as over the clay walls of the room. In one corner, the corner beautiful, there hung some icons with pictures on either side of them. In the place of honor at the table sat Vasily, stripped now to his black underjacket and chewing his frozen mustache as he gazed round the hut and at those about him with his prominent hawk-like eyes. Next to him sat the bald, white-bearded head of the family, dressed in a white shirt of home manufacture, while further on with a son who had come over from Moscow for the festival, straight-backed, square-shouldered, and wearing a similar shirt to his father's, but of finer material. A 2nd square-shouldered son, the eldest of those living at home, and lastly the neighbor, a red-haired, lanky mujik. These mujiks had had their supper and vodka and were just about to drink tea when the travelers arrived. Consequently, the samovar on the floor by the stove was already boiling. Near the stove also, and in the shelf bunks, could be seen various children, while the old woman, her face covered in every direction with fine wrinkles furrowing even her lips, bustled about behind Vasily. As Nikita entered the hut, she was just taking her guest some vodka, which she had poured out into a tumbler of thick glass. "You must not refuse it, Vasily Andreitch," she said. "No, you really must not. You need something to refresh yourself. Drink it down, my dear sir." Nikita found himself greatly excited by the smell of the vodka, especially now that he was so cold and hungry. He knit his brows and, shaking the snow from his hat and halat, halted for a moment before the icons with his eyes turned away from the company. He crossed himself three times and made a genuflection, after which he turned first to his host and saluted him, then to those present at the table, and then to the woman standing by the stove. Finally, with a general greeting of, "A merry festival to you all," he started to take off his halat, though still without looking at the table. "But you are frozen all over, my brother," cried the eldest brother as he stared at Nikita's snow-caked eyes, beard, and face. For answer, Nikita divested himself of his halat, shook it out, and hung it over the stove, after which he at length approached the table. Offered vodka, he had almost taken the glass and tilted the fragrant, shining liquor into his mouth when he glanced at Vasily and remembered the pawned boots, as well as the cooper and the young son for whom he had promised to buy a horse in the spring. So he ended by declining the vodka with a sigh. "I would rather not drink it, I thank you humbly," he said with knitted brows, and seated himself on a bench by the window. "But why?" asked the eldest brother. "Because I would rather not. I would rather not," Nikita replied without raising his eyes, as he squinted down at his short beard and mustache and thawed the icicles out of them. "It does not suit him," put in Vasily, smacking his lips over a cracknel washed down with the vodka. "Well, give me the teapot, then," said the kindly old woman. "I will get you some tea, for you must be frozen. Why are you so long at the samovar, my good woman?" "It is quite ready," retorted one of the younger ones, as she wiped the covered samovar with a napkin. Then, raising it with some difficulty, she came and plumped it down on the table. Meanwhile, Vasily had been relating how he and his companion had missed their way, wandered about, fallen in with the drunken mujiks, and twice returned to the village. His hosts marveled at the story, and then went on to explain how and where they had gone wrong, who the drunken mujiks had been, and the route which Vasily and Nikita must take when they set off again. "Why, even a child could find the way as far as Molchanovka," said the neighbor. "And once there, you will only have to hit the turning near the village. You'll see a copse there. To think that you never got so far!" "But hadn't you better stay the night here?" put in the old woman persuasively. "The women shall get you a bed ready." "Yes, do so, for if you were to get lost again, it might be a terrible business," added her husband. "No, no, really, I cannot, my good friend," replied Vasily. "Business is business. Delay an hour and you lose a year," he added, remembering the timber and the rival buyers who might forestall him. "Shall we go now?" This last to Nikita. Nikita returned no answer for a moment, and seemed absorbed in the task of thawing out his beard and mustache. At length he muttered gruffly, "It would hardly do to get lost again, would it?" As a matter of fact, he was gruff because he wanted the vodka so badly, and the only thing which would assuage that yearning of his was tea, which he had not yet been offered. "But we need only to reach that turning," protested Vasily, "and we simply can't lose our way afterwards. From there onwards it will be all forest road." "Well, it is for you to say, Vasily Andreitch," said Nikita, as he took a tumbler of the tea now proffered him. "If we must go, we must, that's all. Drink up the tea, then, and quick march." Nikita said no more, although he shook his head disapprovingly, but poured the tea out carefully into the saucer and began to warm his work-swollen fingers in the steam. Then, having bitten off a crumb from his lump of sugar, he bowed to his hosts, said, "A good health to you all," and poured the grateful liquid down his throat. "If only we had someone to guide us to the turning," sighed Vasily. "That could be managed," said the eldest brother. "Petrushka could harness a horse and go with you as far as that." "Harness up, then, brother, and my best thanks to you," exclaimed Vasily. "And to you also, good sir," said the hospitable old woman. "We have been only too pleased to see you." "Petrushka, off you go and harness the mare," ordered the eldest brother. "Very well," replied Petrushka smilingly as he seized his cap from a peg and departed. Whilst the horses were being got ready, the conversation passed to the subject which had been interrupted when Vasily drove up to the window. It seemed that the old man had been complaining to the neighbor, who was also the local starosta, about his third son, who had sent him no gift for the festival, but had given his wife a French shawl. Here the translator inserts a footnote that a starosta is the village headman. "The young people are getting out of hand nowadays," said the old man. "Indeed they are," agreed the neighbor. "There is no living with them. They are growing much too clever. Look at Demotchkin, who broke his father's arm the other day, all through his being too clever, of course." Nikita kept listening and looking from one to the other of the speakers' faces with an evident desire to join in the conversation, but he was too full of tea to do so, and therefore merely nodded his head approvingly at intervals. He had drunk tumbler after tumbler of tea until he had grown warmer and warmer and more good-humored. The conversation lasted for quite a long time on this subject, on the evil of dividing up families, and proved too absorbing to be successfully diverted, so that in time it passed to the dissensions in this particular household, to the separation which the second son, who had been sitting by meanwhile and maintaining a sullen silence, was demanding. Evidently it was a moot point, and the question above all others which was exercising the household, yet politeness had hitherto prevented the family from discussing such a private affair before strangers. At length, however, the old man could not forbear, and with tears in his voice went on to say that, so long as he lived, he would never permit the separation, that he maintained his household to the glory of God, and that once it were divided, it would become scattered all over the world. "Yes, that is what happened to the Matveyevs," observed the neighbor. "They were a comfortable household once, but separated, and now not a single one of them has anything left." "That is what you desire for us, I suppose?" said the old man, turning to his son. The son returned no answer, and an awkward silence ensued until interrupted by Petrushka, who had duly harnessed his horse and been back in the hut for some minutes past, smiling the whole time. "It reminds me of a fable in Paulson," he said. "A father gave his son a broom to tear across. None of them could tear it, but twig by twig, well, that was easy enough. So also it will be in our case," he added with a broad smile. "But I am quite ready to start now." "Then if you're ready, let us be off," said Vasily. "About that separation, good grandfather, do not give in. It is you who have made the household, and therefore it should be you who are master of it. If necessary, refer the matter to the Mirovoy. He would settle it for you." And here the translator inserts another footnote that a Mirovoy is the local magistrate. "But to behave like this, to behave like this," cried the old man with unrestrained grief. "There is no living with them. It is the devil's doing entirely." Meanwhile, Nikita, his fifth tumbler of tea swallowed, had placed the empty glass by his side instead of returning it, in the hope that he would be given a sixth. But there was no more water left in the samovar, and so the hostess brewed no more tea, while Vasily was already putting his fur coat on. Accordingly, there being nothing else for it, Nikita rose, replaced his lump of sugar, which he had nibbled on every side, in the sugar basin, wiped his perspiring face with the lappet of his jacket, and went to put on his halat. This done, he sighed heavily. Then he thanked and took leave of his hosts, and left the warm, bright living room for the cold, dark porch, which was rattling with the wind which hurtled through it, and which had drifted the snow through the chinks of the quaking outer door until it lay in heaps upon the floor. Thence he passed into the dark courtyard. Petrushka, clad in a sheepskin jacket, was standing by his horse in the middle of the yard and smilingly quoting some verses from Paulson. "The lowering tempest hides the sky. The whirlwind brings the driving snow. Now like a wild beast it doth cry. Now like a child it whimpers low." Nikita nodded his head approvingly and unhooked the reins while the old man brought a lantern into the porch to guide Vasily to the sledge. He tried to light him with it, but it was blown out in a twinkling. Even in the yard, it was easy to tell that the storm was worse than ever. "What fearful weather," thought Vasily to himself. "Perhaps we shall never get there. However, there is business to be thought of. Besides, I have got myself ready now, and my host's horse has been put in. God send we get there, though." The old man, likewise, was thinking that it would be better for them not to set out, but he had already tried to dissuade them, and they had not listened to him. It would be no use asking them again. "Perhaps, too, it is only old age which makes me so nervous, and they will arrive safely," he thought. "Let us ourselves, at least, go to bed in the meanwhile. Enough of talking for tonight." Petrushka, at all events, had no thought of danger. He knew the road and the whole neighborhood too well for that. Moreover, he had been greatly put upon his mettle by the couplet about the whirlwind and the snow, which seemed to him to describe with extraordinary exactness what was to be seen in the yard. As for Nikita, he had no wish to go at all, but he had been too long accustomed not to have his own way and to serve others, so that, in the end, there was no one to prevent them from setting out. This ends the fourth section. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Brooks Jensen, Anacortes, Washington. Master and Man by Leo Tolstoy. Section 5. Vasily walked through the porch, peered about in the darkness till he discerned where the sledge was, took the reins, and climbed in. "All right in front," he cried. Petrushka, kneeling in his own sledge, started his horse, and Brownie, with a loud neigh as he scented the mare in front of him, dashed away after her. They issued thus into the village street, passed the outskirts, and took the same road as before, the road which ran past the yard with the frozen linen, although the linen was quite invisible now, past the barn heaped with snow, and from the gables of which a cloud of snow dust kept blowing, and past the bending vines with their mysterious murmurings and pipings. Then once more the travellers were launched upon a sea of snow, which raged both above and below them. The wind was so strong that when it was upon their flank and their wrappings filled before it, it actually careened the sledge to one side and threw the cob out of his stride. Petrushka kept shouting encouragement as he drove his stout mare ahead of them, while the cob followed her closely. After about 10 minutes' driving, Petrushka turned aside and shouted something, but neither Vasily nor Nikita could tell what he said for the sound of the wind. They guessed, however, that they had reached the turning. Sure enough, Petrushka had wheeled to the right, and the wind, which had hitherto been chiefly on their flank, now met them full in the face, whilst something could be seen showing black through the snow on their right hand. It was the copse which marked the turning. "God go with you," cried Petrushka. Thank you, Petrushka." "The lowering tempest hides the sky," shouted the lad once more, and vanished. "Goodness, what a poetry spouter," remarked Vasily as he started the cob again. "Yes, he is a fine young fellow, a real honest mujik," returned Nikita, and they went on. In order not to squander the warmth engendered by the tea which he had drunk in the hut, Nikita wrapped himself up well, hunched his shoulders until his short beard covered his throat, and sat perfectly silent. In front of him he could see the two dark lines of the shafts forever cheating his eye and looking to him like the ruts of a beaten road, the cobs tossing flank and knotted, wind-blown tail, and further ahead the animal's lofty douga, nodding head and neck and disheveled mane. At intervals, posts would leap into sight, and he would know that the sledge was still keeping the road and that there was nothing for him to do. Vasily held the reins loosely, leaving it to the cob to guide himself. Nevertheless, although Brownie had had a long rest in the village, he went unwillingly and as though he would like to turn aside at any moment, so that Vasily frequently had to straighten him again. "There goes a post on the right, 2, 3, counted Vasily, "and there is the forest in front," and he went on to himself as he gazed at something showing dark ahead of them. However, what had seemed to him a forest proved to be only a bush. This they passed and had covered another 50 yards or so, when, behold, there was neither forest nor a fourth post to be seen. "Never mind, we shall be at the forest in a moment," thought Vasily, as, excited by the vodka and tea, he jerked the reins again instead of pulling up. The willing, docile animal obeyed, and, now at an amble and now at a moderate trot, went whither he was driven, although he knew it was in the wrong direction. Another 10 minutes passed, and still there was no forest. "We have missed the road again," exclaimed Vasily, at last pulling up. Without speaking, Nikita descended from the sledge, and after tucking up his halat, which sometimes clung to him and sometimes flapped up and down, according to the strength of the gusts of wind, began to flounder about over the snow. First he tried the one side, and then the other, and thrice vanished altogether. At last, however, he returned and took the reins from Vasily's hands. "We must go towards the right," he said brusquely and decisively, as he turned the cob in that direction. "Very well, if to the right, to the right," agreed Vasily, as he surrendered the reins and thrust his numbed hands up his sleeves. Nikita said nothing more beyond crying, "Now do your best, my pet," to the cob. Nevertheless, the animal moved forward only at a foot's pace, in spite of all Nikita's shaking of the reins. The snow was knee-deep in places, and the sledge moved through it in jerks with each stride of the animal. Presently, Nikita took up the whip, which had been hanging over the splashboard, and used it once, whereupon the good cob, unused to its lash, plunged forward and broke into a trot, only, however, to subside again into an alternate amble and walk. They proceeded thus for about 5 minutes. It was so dark, and there was such a swirl of snow both around them and on the ground, that it was scarcely possible for them to even see the cob's douga. Sometimes, indeed, it was almost as though the sledge were standing still and the ground gliding backwards from it. Suddenly, the cob stopped short, as though he had scented something in front of him. Nikita threw down the reins and leapt lightly out in order to go to the cob's head and see what he was jibbing at. But hardly had he taken a single stride ahead of the animal when his leg shot up and he rolled down some steep declivity. "Whew! Whew! Whew!" he kept exclaiming all the time he was descending and trying in vain to stop himself. But his course was only arrested when his legs ploughed their way into a deep snowdrift at the bottom, while, shaken by his struggles, the drift overhanging the bank above him descended upon his head and crammed a large portion of its mass down the back of his neck. "What a one you are, then," said Nikita reproachfully, both to the snowdrift and to the ravine, as he attempted to shake the snow out of his coat collar. "Nikita! Nikita!" came in a shout from Vasily above, but Nikita sent no answering call. He was too busy for that, for he was employing all his energies in shaking himself and searching for the whip, which had rolled away somewhere while he was shooting down the declivity. Having found it at last, he tried to reascend at the spot where he had come down, but found it impossible to do so, since he merely slid back with each successive attempt, so that finally he was forced to proceed along the bottom to find a way out. Nevertheless, only a few yards from the point where he had descended, he found a place where he managed to creep up on all fours, after which he began to walk along the edge towards the spot where he judged the cob to be. Both cob and sledge were wholly invisible, but inasmuch as he was walking against the wind, he could hear Vasily's shouts and Brownie's welcoming neigh some moments before he actually caught sight of them. "I am coming! I am coming!" he exclaimed. "Why make such a fuss about it?" It was not until he was almost upon the sledge that he was able to distinguish the cob, with Vasily standing beside it, the latter looming very large in the obscurity. "How the devil did you manage to lose yourself?" began his master angrily. "We must turn back, and at least try to return to Grishkino." "I should be only too glad," retorted Nikita. "But which way are we to go? If we fall into this ravine, we might never get out of it again. I myself have just found it pretty hard to do so."
"Yet we cannot stay here, can we? We must go somewhere," retorted Vasily.
Nikita said nothing, but sat down on the rim of the sledge, pulled off his boots, and shook out the snow which had collected in them. That done, he gathered up a handful of straw and carefully plugged a hole in the left one. Vasily also said nothing, as though he meant now to leave everything to Nikita. When the latter had finished pulling on his boots again, he tucked his legs into the sledge, put on his mittens, took up the reins, and turned the cob parallel to the ravine. They had not gone more than 100 yards, however, before the animal pulled up short. In front of them lay the ravine again. Once more Nikita got out and went probing about over the snow. He was absent for some time, but at length reappeared on the opposite side of the sled to that which he had started from. "Are you there, Andreich?" he shouted. "Yes," replied Vasily. "Well, what now?" "There is no getting out this way. It is too dark, and there are too many ravines about. We must try driving back against the wind." After doing so for a little while, they stopped, and Nikita once more alighted and went creeping about over the snow. Then he remounted, but only to alight again almost immediately, until at length he came to a halt by the sledge in a perfectly breathless condition. "Well, what?" inquired Vasily. "Only that I am fairly done, and the cob nearly so, too." "What are we to do, then?" "Wait a minute." Nikita departed again, but returned in a moment or two. "Keep close behind me," he cried, as he walked on before the cob. Vasily had now ceased to give orders, but humbly obeyed Nikita's directions. "This way, after me," cried the latter again, as he turned sharply to the right, and taking Brownie by the head, led him downwards towards a snowdrift. The cob held back at first, and then made a plunge forward, as though to leap the snowdrift. Failing in the attempt, he sank in up to the collar. "Get out of the sledge," cried Nikita to Vasily, who had retained his seat meanwhile. Then, grasping one of the shafts, he exerted all his strength to help the cob drag the sledge out of the drift. "Pull, my pet," he cried to Brownie. "One good pull and the thing is done. Now, now, just one good pull." The cob made a brave effort, and yet another, but failing to extricate himself, settled down as though to reflect upon the situation. "Come, come, my pet, this won't do," Nikita adjured Brownie. "Now then, once again," and he tugged at the shaft on his side, while Vasily tugged at the other. The cob shook his head for a moment, and then plunged forward, suddenly in another attempt. "That's it. You're not going to be buried this time, eh?" cried Nikita encouragingly. Another plunge, a second, a third, and the cob had cleared the drift and stopped short, shaking himself all over and breathing heavily. Nikita was for dragging the sledge a little further yet, but Vasily was so exhausted with the weight of his two heavy coats that he gave up and climbed in again. "Let me rest a minute," he said,
as he loosened the handkerchief which he had wound round his coat collar before leaving the village.
"Very well, there is no great hurry," returned Nikita. "Sit still, and I will lead the cob."
Accordingly, Vasily remained in the sledge, while Nikita led the animal forward for about 10 yards, down a slope, and then up again a little way, and finally came to a halt. The spot where he had done so was not actually in the ravine itself, where the snow blowing off the hillocks and accumulating might have buried them entirely, but in a spot partly sheltered by the lee side of the ravine. Occasionally the wind seemed to drop a little, but it was not for long. Whilst, as if to make up for such lulls, the blizzard would increase tenfold after they were over, and tear and swirl around the travellers more cruelly than ever. One of these violent gusts struck the sledge just as Vasily was descending from it to go take counsel with Nikita as to what they should do next, with the result that they could only cower down without speaking until the fury of the squall was spent. As for Brownie, he flattened his ears and shook his head in disgust. When the squall had abated a little, Nikita took off his mittens, tucked them into his belt, blew upon his hands, and set to work to unfasten the bow rein from the douga.
"Why are you doing that?" asked Vasily.
"Because there is nothing else to be done," replied Nikita, though half apologetically. "I am absolutely tired out now."
"Then aren't we going to try and get any further?"
"No, for we are only exhausting the cob for nothing," said Nikita, pointing to the animal, where it stood patiently waiting for what might be required of it, yet scarcely able to hold itself upright on its stout, sweat-belathered flanks. "Brownie is willing enough, but he can hardly stand on his legs. There is nothing for it but to spend the night here." Nikita said this as if he were proposing to put up in an inn-yard, and went on unfastening the collar thong until the two clasps of the collar fell apart.
"But we shall freeze to death here," cried Vasily.
"Well, what if we do? It cannot be helped," was all that Nikita vouchsafed to reply. This ends Section 5.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.